Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward.
Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. One thing I always love to hear from is anyone who has dealt with any sort of affliction or disability and has done whatever they could to not only get past it, but also thrive. We have definitely seen that with my guest this week. Jenna Udenberg is an author, a disability advocate, and an accessibility educator, diagnosed with juvenile arthritis at only 7 years old. She is a 2020 Bush Fellow. She has her own book that came out in 2023 called Within My Spokes, and she is constantly helping other people provide more inclusive and accessible spaces using her own nonprofit called Above and Beyond With You. Her story is incredibly inspiring, and it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Jenna Udenberg. Jenna, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for being a part of this show. And once again, I got to give all the credit to Podmatch. This is a page that I've been using for several years now, and it looks like things are going to be even more active with Podmatch in the months and years to come. So I'm really excited about that. If you have a podcast or want to be a guest on podcasts, you definitely need to sign up with podmatch.com, and they will hook you up with so many different people, so many different potential guests, so many potential shows that you can be a part of. And Jenna has definitely done that from what I've seen. And I am just really excited to have her here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited for our conversation. And I 100% agree. I wouldn't be where I am in the podcast world without Podmatch. So I encourage everybody to check it out as well.
Absolutely. And you have so many different irons in the fire. I'm wondering where to really begin, but I think the best way is to have people learn about you through your book. Now, one of the things I've noticed in your bio is that you have a book out, came out in 2023, but you note yourself as an aspiring author. Please don't do that. You have put the work in. You have gotten the book out. You have seen that journey to fruition. You now have a book that's out there that you can call your own. You can hold it in your hands. You are an author. So let's drop the aspiring part from the bio, okay?
I'll go and tweak that after. But maybe exactly. I'm aspiring to do more. How about that right now?
There you go. An author aspiring to do more. There you go. But just drop the aspiring part because you are a full author. So tell us a little bit about Between Your Spokes.
Yeah, so Within My Spokes came out of my Bush Fellowship. I've always been told since I was a young kid, especially from people in my medical world, Johnny, I got to write a book. Finally, when life settled down because of the pandemic and big life changes, it was like, all right, now's the time. Thanks to my fellowship, I was able to use some of that money to educate myself on how to become self-published. What is this big world of publishing and authorship and writing and all the things. And so I was glad that I was able to take advantage of that. I was really inspired by somebody out there who was like, what, we keep giving business cards, but business cards don't tell our story. Do you have time to have coffee with 5,000 people? No. But do you have time to sit and write your book and tell your story? And then people get to know you. That way, when you do get a chance to have that coffee or have that lunch or have that business phone call, they kind of already know at least part of your story. They've heard your voice. They've heard your brand. They get to know more of you. And that is so true, but it's so creepy in some ways. I forget that I wrote the book. And then all of a sudden I'm like wheeling down the street or wheeling in a store or whatever. And people are like, oh, you're Jenna, right? Yeah. Oh, I love this part. I'm like, oh gosh, I forgot that I put that in my book. When it's your memoir, I need to tell some of these hard stories. I know I need to be vulnerable and be courageous and just share that life isn't all lemonade. Got to do the hard work of taking those lemons and trying to turn it into lemonade. Sometimes it's successful. Sometimes you just chuck the lemons back at the person that tried to give them to you, right?
It's a good way to do it.
Right? Depends on the life situation. you get tired in the advocacy world when this is your life all the time. And you're just like, I don't always have to be the one making the lemonade. So here's the blender, here's the lemons, or here's the juicer. Yep. You can be a great ally and help make lemonade instead of always having us as the disabled people doing all the work. It's been a great journey. I'm hoping, like I said, in jest, but not necessarily. I would love to write a children's book, like a illustrated book, tap into my career as a music educator for those 19 years. And then also I'm hoping this next month, in the month of October, to re-release the book with a minor edits and that kind of stuff, but then also launch the audiobook, because that's been a lot longer process than I thought it would be. Yeah. But I want that out there for accessibility opportunity. And I know a lot of people listen to audiobooks versus taking the time or the ability to sit and read a book and all that. So I want to make sure that it's as accessible and inclusive as the story can be.
As an audiobook narrator, I can agree with that. That's definitely provided a very good supplementary income. I'm thrilled to hear that you're doing the audiobook for this. And you are narrating it yourself, correct?
Yeah, I have a great college buddy who's an audio engineer. All the work is sitting in his world. I think I do have one more recording to make to send him, but hopefully we'll get that done in the next week and move on to greater things.
Excellent. And hopefully he's got the specifications that are needed for Audible. Because that once you get those, once you have those set up in your system, all the hard work is done for you.
Yeah, I had a great friend in the audio and writing world who keyed us into that before we started this process. So that's good. Always helpful to reach out to mentors and people that have gone before us.
Well done. Well said. So let's dive a little bit into your origin story here, because you were saying before you had the musical education background and you have the book, you have the nonprofit. How did this all start? What was it like in the earlier years? Sure, absolutely.
So story starts, don't remember this, but the family story is at 7 years old in the middle of winter, we as a family were out at a flooded pond in a local park in our little rural Minnesota town on beautiful Lake Superior, and I had a fall. The next morning, this part I remember, I was getting ready for first grade in our goldenrod bathtub. My right knee popped up and it was twice the size of my other knee. And so like any 7-year-old girl, what did I do? I yelled for mommy because mom's making everything better. Mm-hmm. So we went to the doctor. That was actually my labor and delivery doctor. And he took one look at me and said, I think you have water on the knee. And my father was a volunteer ambulance driver in the decade earlier. And he's like, my daughter who's 7 is not an athlete. There's no way that she has water on the knee. We need to get a second opinion. Thankfully, our small rural town had two different ways of having access to GPs. That doctor took some blood work, took one look at me and said, I'm pretty sure you have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, but you need to see a rheumatologist because they can't fully diagnose you. So we went to the next bigger city that had the specialist of rheumatology, because this is back in 1988, so specialists were a little bit more rare than our current 2025 world. And he, again, did x-rays, took some blood work, took one look at me, and he's like, yeah, you have JRA, but Lyme's disease also has all the same symptoms, and that's when Lyme's disease was first on the scene, being a tick-borne illness and being up here in the North Woods and all that. He's like, we have to send you down to Mayo Clinic. Very scary for a little kid. I mean, you have all these big medical words coming at you. Mayo Clinic has lots of doctors with accents from other countries, and English is second language, and I'm absorbing like 3 or 4 different languages. I'm only 7. Lots of stickers, lots of lollipops and those kinds of things. Because of poking, prodding, making me cry. One of the stories that I love to tell that you can find in the book as well is I had never been to a restaurant before that had a guy in a suit with a towel over his arm. And I had never been in a restaurant before that had carpet on the floor. One of the nice doctors had said, here, mom, you need to crush this and hide this in your daughter's food because we need to see if this will help her. And it was just aspirin.
Yeah.
But I took one look at my mom and my dad and I was like, you put that in my mashed potatoes and I'm going to puke. And they're like, no, you're not. And now I know that I'm a texture person. As a little kid, you just know that you're not going to like it. I don't know why. I tried. I ate it. I was a good kid, did what I was supposed to do, but it found its way onto the floor in a not nice way. And I felt horrible. And so did my parents. But it's like, those things just happen. I don't really remember all of it. I just remember like not liking it, not doing all the things. And I remember leaning over out of the chair and seeing something on the carpet. So I was like, I'm so sorry, but I told you.
Maybe next time you listen.
Yeah. And that just really started. That was 38 years ago now. And within a year, I was in a wheelchair. And to me, I didn't know any different. But in the medical world, that's pretty severe, pretty quick, a really aggressive disease. So I kind of became like I always say I was like a Jenga or a Tetris piece, because my right knee was what started it. And then it went to my left ankle, and then it was to my right elbow. It just kept pinging different parts of the body, left to right and right to left. By age 15, my parents said, hey, this is your life. You are making big life decisions right now, and this needs to be your choice, not us imposing this on you. When I was 11, we had a really good PT that came into our world, and he just said, be forewarned, you're going to have well-intending medical people wanting to help your daughter. A lot of those people within our state and this region were like surgery happy. And he's like, it might sound really good, but your daughter's growth plates haven't closed. And once she starts surgery, which she might have to anyways, but once she starts, she'll never stop. And so I was able to stave off surgery until I was 15 or 16. I had an amazing band director when I was in eighth grade, and she inspired me to become a music educator. It was like a year or two after I had her as a student, we ended up finding out that I had fractured my femurs. So my orthopedic surgeon was like, we need to get you in. We just need to clean out your knees. We need to do an arthroscopy and just get you some more motion. Well, our band room at our old high school was not wheelchair accessible. So they would have to take my manual chair and back it up onto something that kind of looked like the track of an army tank, but it was made out of rubber. And it was called Stair Tracker, I believe was the name of it. And it would connect by like two little pins onto the handlebars of my manual wheelchair, and they'd pop me into a wheelie into it, and then they'd pitch that whole device over the steps, and then those tracks would slowly go down stair by stair. But if they didn't get the tracks level between the two tracks on one stair, it would jump. Well, having to do that two times a day, because I was the lead trumpet player for concert band and for jazz band, just took its toll. So I was like, one day I went home from school and I'm like, Mom, I don't need to have surgery. It's a miracle. I can move my legs. I could move my knees maybe 10 degrees. That was amazing. So the doctor's like, nope, we still have to do surgery. They put me out. They threw me on the table. And I woke up and I was like, this is awesome. I had surgery. Not a big deal. They're like, honey, we didn't do anything. We just had to knock you out to get you in certain positions to look at your scans before we were going to do surgery.
Oh, wow.
And, like, you actually have hairline fractures in your femur, which is your thigh bone. And that's how it was making motion. My pain left because of the fractures. So my orthopedic surgeons would tell that story to anybody and everybody that listened for the decades after when they were practicing. It's like, how in the world was moving through a fracture less painful than your knees? Here, my knees had fused, and my body figured out a way to make a joint by giving myself a fracture. So at age 15 was my first total knee replacement. Thankfully, my growth plates had fully closed by that time, so I was eligible for them.
That's good.
Knee replacements are no joke. They can happen at any age, and they are. I've had both knees, both ankles, a hip, and a left elbow. All done. By far, knees are the hardest recovery. Just got done with my eighth or ninth knee replacement or revision 8 weeks ago. Still in the process of rehabbing that. The doc, it's the last knee I'll have to have. I'm going to hold him to that because...
Brave statement to say. I'm hoping that winds up being the case.
When I said, I'm going to hold you to that, I think they got a little backpedaly.
That's a good way to put it. I'm just like, yeah, you better. This better be the last one.
Right. I'm like, remember, I'm only 45. So there's hopefully still a few decades going on. But
yeah. So with everything that you were dealing with, what made you basically want to get into the world of nonprofits?
Oh, yeah. That's really hard when the Americans with Disabilities Act or the ADA is the largest unfunded mandate the American government has ever brought forth. So many people believe that, well, we're in 2025, therefore everything is accessible because there's no funding to support the federal buildings, the public buildings, small businesses, large businesses, industry, to make their spaces and places accessible. Being a 501c3 and being able to get grants and other ways of funding that especially smaller rural mom and pop restaurants, businesses, those kinds of things, they're mm-hmm. not able to get those kinds of funds. Back in 2020, I started creating Above and Beyond with you. And so we're in our third year right now. And our goal ultimately would be that we can help fund by working with local agencies, entities, and businesses to help them create more accessible and inclusive spaces. Nice. Whether that's physically, whether that's attitudinally, whether that's through training and consulting. Mm-hmm. And so Above and Beyond comes from the fact that everyone thinks that the code of ADA is like the ceiling of what they can do. Mm-hmm. But that's wrong. The ADA is just the floor of what people can do to make things more accessible.
It's just the entrance fee. Once you're inside, there's still more to do. You got your movie ticket, but now you still got to get the concessions, the everything that goes with it. You got to get your 3D glasses so you can properly see it.
Everybody has to use the restroom, so let's figure that out too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Exactly.
So that was kind of our hope, still is our hope, trying to figure out how to navigate all of those different areas of it. But the more they've entered into it, there's still a lot of awareness to bring forth and a lot of script rebuilding. This is all we have to do. And that ADA is a checklist. There's a lot of misnomers out there. Like, if we make this accessible for Jenna, then it won't be accessible for George or Jamie or Jane. The reality is everybody, whether disabled or non-disabled, mm-hmm. has different unique abilities. We're all different weights. We're all different heights. We're all different functions. Like, right. You're not going to make one space that can fit every single person's need. But there's this awesome thing called universal design where you can try to at least get most of them. And then Above mm-hmm. and Beyond with You comes alongside and says, if you promote what you have done, then we as the disabled person or loved one or caregiver get to decide if that is a safe and truly accessible spot for me, for that loved one. So often, this even happened to me in this last week, I went to a speaking gig and I was halfway out driving 2.5 hours away. And I was like, shoot, I never mm-hmm. asked if there was a bathroom that was Jenna friendly. Here I am going to speak about accessibility. And I have to go through my own checklist. I just made this assumption, like, we're going to be in a public space. It's a conference. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't. So shame on me for not asking those questions, for making assumptions. But now it's, okay, how can Above and Beyond with You come alongside these entities and come alongside these spaces? How do we share? And so often, so many people that I encounter that are like leaders of spaces, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry this. Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you in some ways for saying you're sorry. Thank you for saying that as a part of your 5-year strategic plan because you're a state entity or you've got a different budget cycle.
Right.
And then my next step is always like, promote what you do have. What? Share the video and pictures of it's not the best accessible bathroom, but show what you have so then we can make the decisions beforehand or afterhand. But then we can still go and enjoy your space, whatever we can get to. But then we know versus like, oh, it's a state park. Of course I can go to the bathroom there. And then you're 3 hours away from any civilization. And then go, oh, now I'm in an emergency stage or now I'm having a medical condition. I made an assumption or because a worker told me it was accessible.
They're all just, it's the way it's promoted. It's almost like an all or nothing kind of thing. And they're not giving you that middle ground on there.
Yeah. And especially because there are ambulatory disabled folks too. This person might be able to take a step up into said amenity where I couldn't take a step up into said amenity, but I can pop a wheelie and get to one spot, but somebody in a power chair probably can't or shouldn't.
Don't try it. Please don't try it.
So
heard it here, folks. Don't try it.
Right. And so like I always say, provide the video or provide the picture. Let us be the ones to decide if it's accessible for us. Because trying to use your interpretation or your definitions of words doesn't suit us well in the end.
That's a great way to look at it. So you're basically just working instead of you got this green light per se from the actual act that was passed. But then it's just a matter of getting the funding, getting everything done on the local end. So you're working with city and state governments for this, correct?
Yeah. And smaller businesses, larger businesses, other nonprofits as well. We have a whole network of different people that we are currently partnering with and some inquiries from other areas of life as well. So just figuring out where those next relationships and partnerships are moving towards.
Excellent. How can my listeners help with this?
A great question. I would say the biggest thing is just raise your own awareness. And if you're a non-disabled person in spaces that you see that aren't accessible, ask the curious questions. If you take a step up into a restaurant, ask to see the manager. And she's like, hey, I got friends that I know would probably love to have your chicken fettuccine Alfredo. But there's a stair. Do you have another entrance? The more that everybody asks those kinds of questions to get everybody talking about it, and then it's not just somebody who's in a chair or using a walker or... And it's always about learning more. I have learned so much in the 3 years of being the founder of this nonprofit. Yeah. I'm just so blessed to have people share their stories. The more that others feel empowered to share their stories, and we love being able to hear and learn more. I have a great friend whose son was actually one of my former students. She's like, yeah, well, then also remember to be like a visual sketch or a visual menus and accessible food. I was like, oh, visual menus. Got it. And it's not for folks that need pictures and not words, but even our aging population with an Alzheimer's, like I've learned from my aging in place partnerships, like, it's easier to point at a picture that you want the cheeseburger or you want the cheeseburger, but no piece of cheese, and being able to use visuals as a way of communicating. So smart, so needed. And especially learning that during the pandemic when everybody was putting their pictures out on social media of like, please support our restaurant. And here's what we're making today. Let's use that in an accessibility way too. But then also accessible food. If you have folks that need to use different kinds of utensils or can only use one hand or fingers, whatever the need might be, accessible food. Love it. So sharing your story with others, being a part of those things, following us on our social media, we can find Above and Beyond with You on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram, buying Within My Spokes at Amazon or wherever you buy a book, that all those proceeds go straight to the work of Above and Beyond with You. And so, yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways that listeners can be a part of this work.
You actually just got me thinking that in addition to a regular print menu, they could have QR codes on the table if they have a phone or an iPad, or if they don't, if maybe the restaurant itself would be able to provide an iPad that they would just hand back to them once they're finished. And that would open up a page that would have that full picture menu of everything.
Yeah. And even as you say that, they could design the QR code almost to be like with the pictures. And then if somebody's dairy free, they could select the no sign over the cheese.
You know?
So much more accessible. Yeah. That's awesome, George. Great.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. There is quite a bit of technology that can lend itself to things like this. Doing surveys, making sure that every restaurant always has their little surveys. We can even request that they add that additional element regarding accessibility to their surveys.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned finding you on social media. Where can they find you?
Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Just look at Above and Beyond with You. And it's so in our logo, it's got the ampersand, but you just spell out and then with, and then it's the capital U because my last name, Udenberg. So my little kindergartners couldn't spit out Udenberg properly or in time by the time.
There it is. Okay.
So
I was going to ask what was the story behind the name, but you just answered that. So that's perfect.
The Above and Beyond just means that you can go above and beyond code. And then with you means we're in partnership. It's not like we're just a one-time consulting, one-time partnership. We're continuing that relationship because it's important to have disabled voices and stakeholders at the beginning, middle, end, and beyond through your whole life of your organization. The U stands for Udenberg because, little kindergartners and adults, sometimes even myself, can't say Udenberg properly.
Well, this has been incredibly eye-opening, and I'm really grateful that you reached out to me to be on the show. I'm so glad that we could have this conversation about what's going on with Above and Beyond with You. Really excited to hear more about this organization and everything you're doing from here on. This is all incredibly fascinating, and anything that can provide this sort of positive way forward for so many people has to be celebrated. That has to be noted. And I hope that more people will do that.
Thank you so much.
And I hope that all of you have been just as inspired as I have from hearing Jenna's story. And I hope you definitely get a copy of her book. We'll have all the information in the show notes. The best way you can help right now is to keep on raising awareness. Every local business that you have around you, they always have surveys. They always have questions about different ways that they can improve their business overall, their accessibility. Ask those questions. See if they will go that extra mile. And even just see, like, if they have a specific different type of entrance or whatever. It's all about making sure that everyone has the same ability to access everywhere they need. So by all means, keep doing your part. Jenna will keep doing her part. For Jenna Udenberg, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.